Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by WERU 89.9 FM, Blue Hill, Maine, and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. The life of the arts is a test of the quality of a nation's civilization, said JFK. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's show, we will chat with many wonderful guests. Dave Stern, University of Maine Lower Brass Professor and the organizer of the first Bangor Tuba Christmas. Meg Gammon, manager of the Common Ground Country Fair. Roxy Sugar, a vendor at this year's Common Ground Fair and founder of Angel Rocks, a sustainable Maine clothing design company. Minquansis Sapiel, co-author of a children's book about the Passamaquoddy tale of the Little People of the Dawn, and the musicians of the Blue Hill Brass who performed at the 2024 Common Ground Fair. Welcome, David Stern, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad that you could come on with us. We are going to be talking about something called Tuba Christmas, and that is the Christmas tradition you didn't know you had, but you definitely want. So 2024 is the 51st year of Tuba Christmas. So tell us a little bit about what it is and the Tuba Christmas backstory.
Thank you for having me on your program. Tuba Christmas is a Christmas concert performed exclusively by tubas. Quite the sonic sound. Tuba Christmas was conceived in 1974 by Harvey Phillips as a tribute to his teacher, William Bell. Bell was the premier tuba player in the United States during the first half of the 20th century. He began his career in the Sousa Band, and after a stint in New York with the NBC Symphony and the New York Philharmonic, he taught at Indiana University, which is where Harvey encountered him. Legends in the community come from his teaching influence. I had the privilege of hearing Harvey Phillips solo with the Colorado Springs Symphony while I was in high school. He played Flight of the Bumblebee as an encore. I had no idea that a tuba could do that. Harvey was one of the founders of the International Tuba Euphonium Association and championed the tuba as a solo instrument. There are numerous tuba-centered concerts throughout the year. However, Tuba Christmas is the most celebrated. The first Tuba Christmas was conducted by Paul Laval in New York City's Rockefeller Plaza Ice Rink in 1974. And last year was the 50th anniversary. There are numerous videos of this event. Traditional Christmas music is performed at the first Tuba Christmas concert and was arranged by American composer Alec Wilder. And we still use this book today.
Cool. So this is the first time it's coming to Bangor. And Bangorites and others will have the joy of hearing a Tuba Christmas on December 8th as part of the Bangor Band concert, Sounds of the Season. So we'll get back to that in a moment, but tell us a little bit about you. You're the organizer of the first Bangor Maine Tuba Christmas, and what were some of your life experiences that led you to the University of Maine?
About 20 years ago, my wife and I enjoyed the privilege of working at the New England Music Camp in Sydney for the summer. To be expected, our native Colorado attitude quickly found a kindred spirit here, and we vowed to return when we could. Fast forward 15 years and we were at a place in life to move wherever we wanted so long as someone got a job. And sure enough, my wife got a job at the University of Maine at Augusta. So here we moved. This was just before COVID and I was making inroads into the musical scene, including helping with the performance of the Maine Music Educators Association District 2 Honor Band Concert by playing, of all things, tuba. The guest conductor for that event was Dr. Philip Edelman. The tuba world is a very small place. So when we had occasion to chat, we found numerous intersections in our past. And as way leads to way, the University of Maine had occasion to hire me to fill some gaps in their teaching staff. As I mentioned before, I had the occasion to hear Mr. Phillips when I was much younger. Included in his biography was a reference to Tuba Christmas. So when the flyer appeared in the band room at my high school, I made the effort to get to Denver and play. That was 39 years ago, and I have not missed a concert ever since. I've soloed, conducted, and hosted many of these in various locations, and I've enjoyed playing two Tuba Christmas concerts for Mr. Phillips in the 90s at the Midwest Band and Orchestra Conference in Chicago.
Well, I am, for one, looking forward to performing in the first Bangor Tuba Christmas. I have played tuba Christmases in the past myself, and I play euphonium, which is, I tell people when they want to know what is a euphonium, I tell them it's a baby tuba, but that's sort of the layman's version. Well, can you just explain a euphonium briefly to our audience?
Absolutely. Brass instruments have a family of instrument designs, I guess you would call it. And each of those designs comes in a myriad of variations because man likes to mess with things. And so the tuba family has the tradition right now, the tubas come in four pitches, be it C, B flat, E flat, and F. And those particular instruments are all designated as tuba. The next one up in that family would be a euphonium. Then you might have a tenor horn, an alto horn, and the flugelhorn, which is typically performed by trumpet players, is actually a member of the tuba family.
Which I also tell people looks like a pregnant trumpet.
Exactly. I also tell people that I do play euphonium, and when they get that blank look, I tell them that it's a tuba going through puberty, which is indicative of my attitude.
Very good. So you already mentioned the purpose of Tuba Christmas is to highlight the tuba as a solo or an instrument that doesn't just play oompahs. It's definitely a major player on the team. So I know that Tuba Christmas made a spot in the Guinness Book of World Records in 2018. Can you tell us what that was for?
Certainly. Typical of tuba players, we have to leave an indelible mark on the world. The record was set for the largest tuba concert with 835 players, ages 11 to 86. Scott Watson, then professor of tuba euphonium at the University of Kansas, led the experience. I'm not sure if I've ever played a concert with someone younger than 11, but I have played concerts with players over 90 years old.
That's crazy. Were you in this Guinness Book of World Records concert?
I was not in Kansas at the time.
Not in Kansas at the time. Well, any musician who plays an instrument in the tuba family can join in the fun. So obviously you play Christmas music and you mentioned the Alec Wilder book. Do you ever have tuba Christmases where people go rogue and have other kinds of arrangements, or what do you do? What kind of music do you have there?
Certainly. As this is our first year trying this in Bangor, I'll be selecting music from the published Tuba Christmas book. This is standard across the world. We'll have copies available for purchase for those who choose to join us. The foundation has set the price at $25 for the larger print books, and we do have treble clef books for those who need them, and $20 for the smaller books. As you mentioned, there are numerous other arrangements out there in the community, which I anticipate incorporating into future performances. And also for anyone who truly wants to show off their tuba bias, we will have Tuba Christmas merchandise in the form of scarves and hats.
I love it. So we're going to be having this concert on December 8th at Peaks Auditorium, and it precedes the Bangor Band concert, Sounds of the Season. So tell us how the day is going to go. How long is the rehearsal, and how long do you anticipate the opening act to be on that December 8th?
So registration begins at 9:30 and we'll start rehearsing at 10. I anticipate rehearsal lasting maybe an hour and a half, maybe, since it's our first time. The concert, as you mentioned, starts at 1. It'll be a 45-minute program as we need to clear the stage for the feature event, the Bangor Band, featuring Adina, of course.
And Dave.
More so Adina, but yes, I'll be there. And that, yes, and as you said, it's in Peaks Auditorium. So you'll be warm. When we play in Denver, we play outside in Larimer Square, and everybody's outside in Larimer Square, and it's not so warm.
Not in December in Colorado, no. I've played in New York City, and the year that I played in New York City, which I think was 1993, December 1993, we played in Grand Central Station, which was quite a sound. I can tell you it was a couple hundred tubas in that grand concourse. Wow, what a sound. There's nothing really like the sound of a tuba. There's a particular sound that comes with what we call a conical bore. So let's talk for a moment about the difference between, for example, a trombone sound and a tuba sound, or a trumpet sound and a French horn sound. There's a qualitative difference there. So how come this is?
That's a terrific question. Brass instruments are typically divided into two families. As you mentioned, there's a cylindrical family and a conical family. In the cylindrical family, the instrument stays the same width for two-thirds of it, and the last third, it goes through the bell flare. In the conical instrument, the tube stays the same width for one-third of it, and then the last two-thirds goes into the bell flare. That change in diameter and the way that manufacturers, as each manufacturer has their own way of coming about that, creates a distinctive sound. The conical instruments, as you mentioned, which are typically trumpet and trombone, have a more direct kind of sound.
Cylindrical.
Yes. And the conical instruments, such as euphonium, tuba, horn, cornet, have a mellower kind of sound to them. And so that's as those colors are used by composers, you're going to hear and experience distinct flavors in all of that. The beauty of the Tuba Christmas is that we also invite baritone horn players, which usually are conical, but sometimes they're cylindrical, depending upon the manufacturer. So you'll end up with just this little zing on the top that really gives it a special kind of texture to it that's quite enjoyable.
And it's funny because in the website for Tuba Christmas, which is accessible. What is that website again, Dave, for Tuba Christmas?
Certainly. It's originally named tubachristmas.com.
Okay. Hard to remember. They talk about things like serpents and ophicleides, which are outdated experiments. As you say, people like to mess with stuff. So you've got composers in the 19th century, I think, primarily, who were trying out different sounds, and they play in the same register as a tuba. But I don't think anybody in Bangor probably has seen a serpent or an ophicleide. But if you happen to have one in your closet, you're welcome to dust it off and bring it to Tuba Christmas, according to the website. That would be pretty amazing.
If I may say something in here.
Yeah.
The tuba family has a rich history. And in fact, this instrument continues to undergo evolution today. Manufacturers continue to make tweaks on the various models to get that more resonant response. And as they continue to make their tweaks and what have you, we find new ways of getting better sounds. A favorite Tuba Christmas that's hosted in Columbus, North Carolina, invites anyone with period instruments, as you mentioned. These are the predecessors to the modern tuba. Mm-hmm. That includes serpents, ophicleides, helicons, and sax horns. And if you come to the Freeport Tuba Christmas on the day before, you will see helicons. These instruments are invited to perform two pieces on the concert just by themselves. And so you get an authentic period instrument sound on Christmas music. It's really quite the experience. If you have one of these and you're in the area, you're most welcome to bring one. We may even have you come out front and show everyone, this is what it used to sound like. This is what it sounds like now, and we're all a lot better for it.
Yeah, I imagine. Well, that's very interesting. I didn't realize. I saw that Freeport had a concert, so that's on the 7th.
Yes, the Freeport concert's on December 7th. It's in the early afternoon, and I'm one of the administrative team for that, so I will be there tooting away and moving chairs and stands and whatever needs to get done.
Where is that being held?
Freeport High School.
Freeport High School. Very cool. Well, if you want to see a little bit of that tuba history, that would be a great place to go as well. And it was interesting because in watching some of the videos on YouTube, there are people who make a December ritual out of traveling from tuba Christmas to tuba Christmas and playing in various places. It costs $10 to participate. Is that correct?
Yes, registration is $10 and you get the commemorative button.
Fantastic. So that leads me to my question. How can Creative Maine listeners either participate as a musician or celebrate as an audience member? Let's rehash.
Sure. Anyone, regardless of ability, so long as you can play the right notes at the right time, is welcome to join us. My wife is a professional flute player and makes her annual euphonium performance at Tuba Christmas. The concert, as you mentioned before, is scheduled for Sunday, November 8 at 1 p.m. at Bangor High School. And registration begins at 9:30 with rehearsal at 10 a.m. If you're in the audience, you will be invited and expected to sing along.
That's great. So you don't have to do anything ahead of time. You just appear at the registration time, right?
We would appreciate it if you'd oil your valves and possibly grease your slides to make sure your instrument functions.
Well, yeah, okay, that aside, but you don't have to make any application online or anything. You just come.
There is no expectation. You just come as you are, and the music is not technically demanding. There are four parts for each score, and you pick the one that you're most comfortable with.
Perfect. Okay, so how did the great idea to open for the Sounds of the Season concert for the Bangor Band come about?
Once again, in chatting with Dr. Edelman, he observed that in Kansas City, the Tuba Christmas concert is typically held in conjunction with another seasonal concert. I've never experienced joining two concerts for this, but it sure seems like a fabulous idea, and it solves a bunch of logistical problems. Thankfully, being allowed to sit next to you in the Bangor Concert Band, I'm hoping to tap into the public relations machine you already have in place rather than trying to reinvent a wheel.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. So that's how we'll spread the joyous news that Tuba Christmas is coming to Bangor, and all tubists, euphonium players, helicon players, what have you, should dust off their instruments and make ready. So for more information, where can our listeners go?
As we previously mentioned, there's an originally labeled website called tubachristmas.com. A word to your audience, if you happen to be traveling this holiday season and feel the need to go to one of these concerts, check out the website. There are various locations across the globe. Most of them are in this country. Each site has a unique flavor. I used to share hosting responsibilities for the event in Greenville, South Carolina. The city puts in an ice rink in the middle of town, and we would play our concert next to it as an homage to the Rockefeller Center. There are now three Tuba Christmas concerts in Maine. And like I said, I'll be playing at the one in Freeport on December 7th. And if you're near Kennebunkport on December 8th, go check out theirs. Gene Marvin does an amazing job down there at the Nonantum Resort.
Beautiful. Oh, sounds like fun. And as ever, Creative Maine listeners can go to the website at weru.org/creativemaine to get more information. Also, there is the calendar, which I'll be referring to later in our broadcast, and you can go for information on Tuba Christmas and other events happening around our region. Dave Stern, it's been a pleasure. It's been so much fun to have you on board, and we will be playing together and speaking together again soon, and we hope to see all Creative Maine listeners out for Tuba Christmas. Thank you so very much.
Thank you for your time, Adina.
Welcome, Meg Gammon, to Creative Maine. I'm so glad you could take some time and talk to me today about the arts and crafts at the Common Ground Country Fair, which is a wonderful Maine-centric event that has been going how many years now, Meg?
The 50th fair is coming up in 2026. So
wow.
We're very close to the 50th.
Wow, okay. Can you tell us exactly what your role is at the Common Ground Country Fair? You are the manager, I understand?
Yeah, so I am the Common Ground Country Fair manager, and I've been working at the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association since June of 2021, so for about 3.5 years now. And really, as the manager, I work directly with the vendors, the exhibitors, the speakers, and the volunteers that make it all happen. And I'm really in charge of like applications, contracting, guidelines, review process of the applications, and a lot of other miscellaneous things. I'm also in charge of the fair merchandise and ordering all of that. So yeah, it's a lot of different various things.
It's a big job. So what is a little of your background and how did you come to be in this position?
Yeah, so I received my MBA in sustainable innovation in 2019 from the University of Vermont. And I knew that I wanted to work for an organization that was centered around improving our environment, advocating for healthier and more sustainable ways of living, and just lifting people up. And I had actually thought that one day I wanted to open like a health food store, which is really funny to think about now that I work at MOFCA. But anyway, so I stumbled across the open fair manager position just out of luck when I was looking at open job postings in a world that was kind of coming out of the pandemic. The job that I was in throughout the pandemic just wasn't really wasn't the right fit for me anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was just looking for that next step in my career. And just by happenstance came into this position, and it's just been a wonderful fit.
Great. Well, the part of your job that I would like to focus on Creative Maine is that Maine crafters and artisans and artists are represented on different levels at the fair. And I want to talk about what those are, make those a little clearer, and maybe you can explain a few things to us. So the fair has several craft vending areas, and one is juried and the others are not. And can you explain to us what a juried show is and how it works?
Absolutely. So the fine art and craft market is the only juried area at the fair. All of the other areas, people have to apply, and the applications go through a very thorough review process to ensure that they meet the goals and objectives of the fair, but they are not juried like the fine art and craft market. And so a juried show means that all of the applicants submit photos of their work, and those submissions are reviewed anonymously by a jury that consists of an odd number of people with knowledge of crafts.
Okay.
So it's basically a competition, and the artists who receive the highest number of votes get a spot at the fair.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that is interesting because I see very often that term used in galleries and other applications. So good. Thank you for letting us know that. Now, you mentioned that it promotes Maine-based businesses that support the goals and objectives of MOFCA. So which goals and objectives are these?
Yeah. So I think what I'd like to start off with is that the mission of MOFCA, which is to educate about and advocate for organic agriculture, illuminating its interdependence with a healthy environment, local food production, and thriving communities. And I feel that the main marketplace and the fine art and craft market really fits into MOFCA's mission to help create and support thriving communities and a healthy environment.
Okay.
So the fair improves the quality of rural Maine living by promoting the development and sale of goods and services produced by Maine people in a sustainable way. That's not taking away from the beauty of Maine and our environment. And I think that the fine art and craft market and Maine marketplace serves as wonderful proof that you can have a successful business without compromising your values and operating sustainably.
Okay, well put. I know that there's, I'm going to get back to the crafts, but there's a large fiber area. So MOFCA and Common Ground Fair are famous for that. And I was interested that fiber, like sheep's fleece and so forth, have to be natural and as little processed as possible. And that goes right along with the sustainability piece that you were mentioning. And I was sort of amused to find that there is no superwash yarn allowed at the fair and no glittery stuff. Mm-hmm. And so how about something like Tencel? Is that, I mean, it's made from wood fiber, but it's very processed.
Yes. So we don't allow any synthetic fibers at the fair. Like anything that is not made from the animal or produced from the animal is not allowed as a fiber option at the fair.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that's non-organic is not allowed. Tencel, I have not done enough research into it to know whether or not that specifically would be allowed at the fair. And that's something that I love about this job as well, is that I'm able to learn something new every day and learn about different products and if they're good for our environment or not. So the fact that it's made out of wood, it potentially could be accepted, but the processing would be something to take into consideration.
Sure, sure. So, okay, so getting back to the areas of the fair where vendors are. So you have the juried...
The fine art and craft market.
Right, there you go. Okay, and so the other one is called the Maine Marketplace, which I assume has the same goals and objectives at its core, but it's not juried. So how do you choose who vends at the Maine Marketplace?
Yeah, that's a great question. And something we get asked a lot about is what is the difference between the fine art and craft market and the main marketplace? And the fine art and craft market is where main artisans and craftspeople, it's kind of like one person and they're creating a high quality piece of art that is unique and original in design and concept.
Okay.
So think of these people as the person who is painting unique artwork. They are doing pottery. They are doing photography, jewelry. So all of those are like metalworking is a big one. And
woodworking,
exactly. So yeah. It's somebody who has like a particular skill that's very, you know, art centric. The main marketplace area is a little bit different because it's more like small main businesses who are, you know, working and creating in Maine and making sustainable products.
Right. I noticed there was one booth that had wooden spoons and wooden utensils for the kitchen and others that have clothing and yes. So forth. So, okay. So,
yes, it's a very diverse area, the main marketplace, because it's really any any business that is operating sustainably and can prove that to us in their application mm-hmm. can be considered for this area at the fair.
Okay, excellent. And the third, I guess, fourth, if you include the fiber area, is something called the exhibition hall. And so this is a place where talented amateurs may submit works to be judged, but not, they're judged not in comparison to one another, but against their craft's standards of excellence. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah. So the exhibition hall is just like is a more fun part of the fair. And the original purpose of an exhibition hall was to improve local farming by bringing farmers and gardeners together and to compare the outcome of their farming and gardening practices. And of course, it's a little different when it comes to artists who submit their work, but it's still like a really great opportunity for them to look at other artists' works, compare and contrast them, and learn from them. And so any amateur artist from Maine who lives in Maine, that's the one caveat there, can bring their artwork to the exhibition hall. It's just as simple as that. And an amateur is basically anybody who does not make a substantial portion of their living selling the art or craft that they've entered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I know I saw quilts, I saw cross stitch, I saw knitted objects and so forth in this display.
Yeah, it could be any of those things. It could be photography, painting, silk screens, woodcuts, sweaters, even if you have somebody who likes knitting sweaters. So it's very diverse and
beautiful. Okay. So this is for amateurs. The other is for small businesses, and the other was for artisans who are juried. So that's quite a landscape. Can you tell our listeners of Creative Maine how they may engage at the fair, either as a vendor, as a maker, or as an amateur maker at the exhibition hall? What steps will they have to take?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that the first thing would be to ensure that you are using sustainable materials and being environmentally conscious and making those decisions in your making process. So the decisions you make to create your finished products are what we'll be reviewing in your application. So think about things like, where do you purchase your materials from? Are you purchasing them from local art stores or from Amazon? Do you purchase your yarn from a crafts store or from a local fiber producer? Are you upcycling when you can to create a cool, unique product that keeps waste out of the landfills? What are you using for packaging? If you're using packaging, do you need to use packaging? Does your product require packaging, or are you just creating unnecessary waste? How do your products support the Maine economy and environment?
Beautiful. Okay. So where can listeners go for further information to apply or to ask more questions? And is now a good time to start planning for September 2025?
As crazy as it seems, now is a great time to start thinking about applying for September 2025. The applications for the 2025 fair will be opening in December for the Fine Art and Craft Market and the Maine Marketplace area. If you want to enter our poster design contest to come up with the 2026 poster design for the 50th fair, we'll start taking online submissions in January. All other applications will open in the winter and spring of 2025. And to find out more information, go to mofca.org and go to the fair vendors and applications page. There is a list of all of the areas there. There's also a button that's called the application notification form. Click on that, fill out your contact information, and we will send you the link to the application when it opens in December.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. This has been so interesting. And it shows a little behind the scenes of what happens at our favorite fair. So
no problem at all. And if you do have any additional questions after going to our website, you can always email me at commonground@mofca.org. And I'd be happy to help answer any additional questions.
Well, Meg, this has been delightful. Thank you so very much. And best of luck planning for the 2025 MOFCA Common Ground Fair. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Creative Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. This episode, we will highlight some local resources for unique holiday shopping. The annual Orland Community Center Craft Fair will take place on Saturday, December 7th from 9 to 2 p.m. at the Orland Community Center, 21 Schoolhouse Road, Orland, Maine. Admission is free. Come and find a special handmade gift for a friend or yourself. The Wabanaki Winter Market 30th Anniversary event takes place on Saturday, December 14th from 9 to 3 at the Hudson Museum on the University of Maine campus. Free and open to the public, the market features art by Wabanaki artists, including basketry, beadwork, woodwork, and more. In addition to shopping, market goers will be treated to workshops, demonstrations, and music. For more information, visit umaine.edu/Hudson Museum/Wabanaki Winter Market. HOME Co-op's homemade gift shop sells beautiful, functional, and unique gifts for the holidays or anytime. Located at 90 Schoolhouse Road in Orland, sales benefit community members and provide a means for the makers to augment their incomes. On November 30th, the Home Co-op Homemade Gift Shop is going to have a Holly Jolly Holiday Open House, and you are invited. Go to 90 Schoolhouse Road, Orland, Maine, meet some of the artists and crafters, enjoy light refreshment, and get a jump start on Santa and start filling your pack. For more information and open hours, visit https://homemmausa.org. Finally, the Bangor Band will present its annual Sounds of the Season concert on Sunday, December 8th at 2 p.m. at Peaks Auditorium in Bangor, a musical treat for all ages. The opener for this concert will be the first annual Bangor Tuba Christmas at 1 p.m. For more information, visit bangorband.org. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on weru.org. Next up, Creative Maine speaks to vendors and musicians at this year's Common Ground Fair. I am at the Maine Marketplace section of the Common Ground Fair now, and I am speaking with Roxy Sugar, who is a wonderful clothing designer, and I am going to ask her to speak about her
creative journey and her designs and the fabric that she uses to make her beautiful designs. Welcome to Creative Maine, Roxy.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here with you in this hallowed ground, as we just said, where everything truly is the way life should be.
Agreed.
Yes. And so we are so thrilled and honored to be here because I've been on that journey now for over 2 decades. I committed to fashion very early. And then once I really set out on my own, which I launched Angel Box in 1999, so it's turning 25 this November.
Wow.
But within like a few months, I was like, you know, I want things to feel good and I want to have less impact on the earth. And fashion in particular, both from, you know, fast fashion and the waste of production and the atrocities that have happened, you know, needed a new place to go.
Right.
So what I'm very proud of now is we have evolved over time, and all of my fabrics are plant-based. So our primary fabrication we love the most is our bamboo, 92% bamboo, 8% spandex for stretch and comfort. We love that it comes from the earth, that it comforts us, and it returns to the earth.
Okay.
And on top of that, only recently have I really realized just how small our footprint is for a clothing manufacturer, because we spread, cut, stitch all in the historic textile mills of Biddeford, and our core fabric supplier is literally 5 hours north of us. They knit, dye, and finish, small vertical operation. They've been in organics and committed to reducing carbon imprint for 2 decades, much like myself.
And at this time when a lot of textile mills are closing, and a lot, I'm more in the yarn world, but I know that it's difficult to stay open and stay viable, so that they are a vertical operation with that much impact is wonderful.
Yeah, I've been so impressed, and I've managed to go up and see them a couple of times and meet the whole team, and you know, they just, it's a wonderful partner to work with. And then because they are just over the border in Quebec, all of their operations are 95% alternative energy by default, and then from there it's a 5-hour drive to where we spread, cut, and stitch. And I have always been close to zero waste, because little things like our opera sleeves and aria sleeves and bands, that I designed them to fit into what are normally holes and waste in the industry. So we've always had a very low waste factor, and that's important to me. And then I was extra impressed with them my last visit, because they have one machine that throughout the industry across the world, it's called the stabilizer for the fabric. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing that is still gas or oil driven in their operation. So he's working with engineers to try to develop the first ever electric version of that. So it's really nice to have a partner on that end that's so committed, and then us being so committed and have such a tight window. If nothing's coming.
That's wonderful. Tell us about your styles. I know they're very size inclusive, mm-hmm. and very feminine, very beautiful.
Thank you. We try to do simple pieces. To me, it's always about the angel or the wearer, you know, that should be the thing that shines and does so because she feels good in what she's wearing, or they. It doesn't, right. You know, it's
of
not
course.
Exclusively for the ladies. They just tend to gravitate to it a little bit.
Okay.
But it's also very much about layering, and layers that are playful and with a ton of versatility, because I also realized early on that versatility is another component of sustainability, because the more we can use one piece, the less maybe we have to consume. You know, I have the flirt, that's a poncho, it's a strapless dress, it's a modern petticoat slip. We have the hourglass, that's an infinity scarf or a comfort shaper or pencil skirt on the body. We have pockets that flip out to do ties. We, you know, just little things that just be able to change it up and have fun with it. And that spirit of play returns 1,000-fold. As I, for example, I was wearing it earlier, this mantra top, a simple, roomy kind of tank with an attached cape. So it's very elegant.
She
by nature, there's different ways to style the cape. But I had a customer one day who was trying all these different ways, and then she came out of the dressing room. She's like, it looks great upside down, too. And it does. And so I love that open mind thinking. There is no wrong way to wear it. I've always chosen these delicate seams that are beautiful inside and out. Mm-hmm. So you can put it on inside out. Nobody cares. Nobody notices.
Love that.
I love that. So how did you get started designing, Roxy?
I committed early. I learned how to sew from two grandmothers when I was 8. So I was hooked. And then I sort of oscillated for a minute. I thought I should be a ballerina because I do love to dance. But I committed to fashion by the age of like 12 or 13. And then got a scholarship for fashion design for college. And then moved to New York, which is my plan, and took additional courses at Parsons. And then ended up teaching at Parsons for 8 years while I was launching Angel Rocks and getting it off the ground.
Well, that's a wonderful resume. So can you please tell our listeners at WERU how they can access your catalog and how they can see what wonderful things you have to offer.
Thank you so much. Well, of course, we have a website, and that is angelrocks.com, and it's spelled angelrox.com. And so that's always a great portal for the videos of how to do things, to see our photography, which my models are my stitchers, are my, you know, just friends and just real beautiful people that are around us everywhere. And, you know, so that's always fun to explore. But if you have the luxury of coming in person, that's even more fun. Obviously here at Common Ground each year is, we just love it. We do have our flagship store in Biddeford, where we're making everything. And then we have a store in Portland on Commercial Street. And our stores are called Sugar. S-U-G-E-R, which is my last name.
Okay.
And we now have, Angel Rocks was the first collection. Sugar is its sister collection. Angel Rocks, the hallmark is this pearled seam that's, like you said, feminine, that's flirty, that's playful. And then Sugar is kind of our smooth classics.
Okay.
And we find there's a need for both. And so anyway, the stores are Sugar. And so Biddeford, Portland on Commercial Street, Old Port. And then we just opened one in Newburyport, Massachusetts.
Ah. Good,
which is just getting going. So, you know, we're excited and just grateful every day. And, you know, grateful that in our stores, we're also, in addition to our clothing we make, able to represent a ton of other makers and lifestyle products. And many of them here at Common Ground, too.
That's wonderful. So angelrocks.com.
That's correct.
Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for speaking with me. It was an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm here in the Wabanaki tent at the Common Ground Fair, and I'm speaking with Mequances Sapiel, and she is an author. She has written some children's books about Penobscot legends and tales personalized to herself and her daughters. Her daughter, Mensos, has done the illustrations for the books. And I'm going to talk to her right now about the books and their creative journey together. So welcome to Creative Maine. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Please tell us, I'm looking at this wonderful book called Little People of the Dawn. Can you tell me about it?
Yes, so this book started, I grew up on the Passamaquoddy Reservation. And I would always hear from my elders and people in the community about the little people. And I was always intrigued by them, and I always heard that they would hide in the caves. And so we'd always kind of be going looking for them and be curious. But it was kind of based on my life growing up near the beach. And we're the only reservation out of all the Wabanaki tribes that have a reservation on the ocean or by oceanfront property, and those are our traditional, I mean, has always been our homelands all through here, you know. So we would always go down to the shore and we would play on the beach. And then when I grew up, my daughters would be doing the same thing. So that's when it kind of sparked the idea of writing a book about the little people. And it was kind of, I made my daughters the characters, but it was really kind of based on my life of growing up on the reservation, loving and playing on the beach. But I took for granted it because I didn't really take time to really know and learn about my own culture and with the language. And so as I got older, I realized how important that was and to know more about who I was. So I intertwined the book with them going to seek out the little people and they go on a journey to befriend the little people. Yeah. So there's lessons in there about taking care of Mother Earth and having the courage and the perseverance to always lead with your heart, because even though you want to do something, sometimes your journey is going to be where you're doing things alone and not everybody's going to be on board. So she gets, the main character is Lily, she gets reassured by the little people that she gets reassured that she's been doing a great job and she's on the right path and they're proud of her. And so she realizes that it is important part and she's not going to give up and that she's going to learn more about who she is and her culture.
Those are beautiful lessons.
Yes.
Can you tell us how our WERU listeners can find you and your book?
Well, it's on Amazon, but you can find me. I know it's kind of old school or not very like business-like, but on Facebook. And I'm good on with Messenger. So you'll find me under my name, Minguensis. I don't know if I have to spell it for you, but it's Minguensis. And that's how you'll find me on Facebook. And you can just message me and I can send you the book. Or
great. Well, have a wonderful fair. It's a beautiful book and the illustrations are gorgeous. Thank you so much for joining us on Creative Maine.
Thank you for having me.
Now we're going to hear the Blue Hill Brass playing their rendition of the Wells Fargo Wagon. For a second, tell me your names.
I'm Steve Norris.
I'm Paul Greenstone.
Kirk Brosmer.
And you play this together all year long, or just for the fair, or how
all
do you
all year long, 24/7. We're everywhere. We try to be everywhere. We're most busy during the fair season and holidays, things too.
Well, this strikes such a fun note for the fair.
That's what people say.
Yeah, well, we've been doing it for a long time. So the answer is, we can, and we do, strike a festive note.
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, welcome to the Common Ground Fair. You sound fantastic.
Well, we're happy to be here. It's such a fabulous run they've had here, and is that special? It's different than all the other fairs. It really is.
Thank you, and we look forward to hearing you on WERU.
Absolutely. 89.9 FM, WERU.org. enjoy the rest of your fair.
Thanks for stopping by. Yeah.
Thank you so much to my delightful guests, Dave Stern, Meg Gammon, Roxy Sugar, Ms. Quances Sapiel, and Steve Norris, Kurt Brosmer, and Paul Greenstone of the Blue Hill Brass. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on weru.org for another eclectic episode on December 19th at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when we will learn about the iconic Maine hero, Joshua Chamberlain, his autobiography, and his house museum in Brunswick. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson wishing you a peaceful holiday. Whether you celebrate Thanksgiving or Friendsgiving, surround yourself with those whom you cherish and bring you joy and hope. The observance of a ritual like Thanksgiving is itself a creative act. We are actively renewing bonds of friendship, expressing love through food, and taking stock of what is good in our lives. As always, I wish you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.